Hello, friends, and welcome to the 14th episode of a mostly brand new Marvel Snap podcast, Snap Judgments. As always, I'm your friend, Roy Rogers, and I am joined by my friend and yours, the esteemable, mostly esteemable, Aaron Glazer. How are you doing this evening, my friend?
Better before that loss, but otherwise I'm doing great.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you lost in that Darkhawk game. I'm sorry that Arlem Zola did not work out for you.
It turns out Arrow beat Zola. We knew
that. Who knew? Who knew? And that wonderful laugh is our wayward fourth co-host. I was like, how many of us are to do the show? Four of us. Will Lentz, how are you doing today, my friend Will?
I'm doing pretty good. Man, you guys have been hammering out episodes. I thought I would be able to make about every second, but it's more like every third at this rate at best.
Well, Will, so. You know, you just have a busier and more exciting life than the rest of us. So,
unlike us, Will touches grass.
It's true.
Regularly.
I mean, that's regularly. All you have in Missouri, right? Is just endless amounts of grass. All right. There's so many jokes I could make right now about things Aaron has said about the South in podcasts that we've done over the last near decades. But I will spare newer listeners the jokes that Aaron has made. But if we were doing the other podcast, this would be a whole extended digression.
I don't know what Roy's talking about. I love the American South and know a lot about its diverse cultures.
I won't go too far down that road. I'll just say there's really not that much grass growing in the clay here. But I am proud of Roy for saying Missouri.
All right. Well, we are here again. Chris Lavin is on vacation this week. And so he's not in this episode, but please send your good vacationing energy to Chris, our loyal listeners.
Roy, however, is much more dedicated and is joining us from the great Portland, Oregon.
That is entirely incorrect, but that's amazing that you don't know what my travel plans are. That's impressive.
Seattle, Washington, somewhere it's rainy.
The place is not known for rain. It's known for fog. Is Aaron good enough at geography, or is he like my students and cannot figure it out?
He's visiting Bootman in Las Vegas after last
episode.
Yes,
Las Vegas. Well-known for Las Vegas. The desert in Las Vegas.
Fog and rain.
Look, Roy is staying classy in San Diego. I don't know. Let's keep it moving.
You're just like naming all the other cities in...
Right across the Golden Gate Bridge? You're going to San Francisco?
We are going to be in San Francisco, yes. All right, so that brings us to sort of a sort of special episode today. We are going to be focused on deck techs and talking about what decks we are enjoying right now and we would bring to a battle mode tournament if we were going to be playing in one now. So sort of you're interested in joining one of the tournaments that our friends at Marvel Snap Zone and Marvel Snap Fan are sponsoring, you could bring some of these decks. All right. And if you are like, you know what, Roy, and there's definitely people want to say that you're full of crap. Well, you're full of crap, and Glazer, less likely full of crap with your deck selections. Where can you tell us this? Well, in a variety of social media overlords.
Venues?
Ooh, venues is a good one. So the first and most important is where you can find Glazer being every small Marvel Snap creator's favorite reply guy, which is our Twitter account, at SnapJudgePod. We are also on Facebook at SnapJudgmentsPodcast. So in between your favorite Shein ads and the sort of nightmarish things that brainwash your grandparents, you can find us on Facebook there. But most importantly, we are on the Snap Fan Discord. All right, Snap Fan is the best Marvel Snap aggregator and news website. And so by joining their Discord, not only are you supporting our show and getting to engage with us a lot, you know, we're all in the Discord. Glazer is very active. The rest of us are present. And we are there to engage with you, but you're also joining an awesome Marvel Snap community that is really growing and is just really positive and very mature. And of course, most importantly, you can email myself, Will, or Chris at our email address, which is at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. So once you've reached out to us, Glazer, what exactly are they going to be complaining about again this about this episode?
Excuse me, my friend. The only thing anyone complains about is my audio quality. Otherwise, we have the most gracious listeners in all of Marvel Snapdom. Thank you very much. And I bought a microphone that I refused to use on Will's podcast, just for the record.
Oh, like,
he gets the cold shit audio. We do this podcast. I'm like, oh yeah, I bought a mic. We've done the other podcast for 8 years of terrible audio.
It's true. It's true.
In fact, I think I offered to spend Patreon money from the other cast to buy Aaron a mic, and I think he refused.
Repeatedly.
I don't like when people spend money on me. Although, if listeners, if you would like us to start a Patreon, please do let Roy know. That's a good thing to email.
Roy just
had a heart attack.
Don't email, I don't want to run that.
Will's a banker. Will's a banker. We can put him in charge of that. All right. So, so Glazer told me to kick him in the show notes. So instead, I'm going to transition us to Glazer telling us about his deck that he would bring to a battle mode tournament if that's what he was doing this week.
So here's the deck I would bring to a battle mode tournament. It is a Valkyrie deck. It was originally created by Cozy Snap. You know Cozy Snap as one of the very biggest Marvel Snap creators. I would have the Thanos deck, but I don't have Thanos yet. It's going to be a couple weeks. So the Thanos deck that Den hit Infinite with, I think, is the best Valkyrie deck. But I would bring Valkyrie because every time I play Valkyrie in a casual Snap battle mode, I win in like 3 games because nobody expects Valkyrie. You're gonna get like 8 cubes early on, and from that point you're just like face smashing, and unless they have an automatic play around for Valkyrie, you're just straight up like dominating. You know who goes great with Valkyrie? My bae, Ghost. So happy I bought Ghost.
There you
Ant-Man,
go.
Ghost, Goose, because less Zabu now, and if you're not getting hit with Zola, those big Shuri decks really, really, really hate Goose. Angela, because Angela works great with Valkyrie. Luke Cage, because Luke Cage means that anything that's bigger than the Valkyrie does not get pulled down. Mojo, because ongoings aren't affected. Rogue, because now your Devil Dinosaur is my Devil Dinosaur. Shang-Chi, because you don't always see Valkyrie. Rescue, Iron Man, Magic for an extra turn of seeing the goodies, and Valkyrie. So what this deck wants to do is use Rescue and Iron Man type cards, or Angela and Goose type cards, to lock down one lane. In the other lane, it wants to play cheapies. I've got to figure out a way to get Wasp into this deck because she's so good on that last turn to really like immediately fill lane with Valkyrie. And on that last turn, it wants to play Valkyrie, turn 7 ideally, play Valkyrie, and Valkyrie is like an auto lane win in 90% of situations. If you're having trouble with Arrow, Valkyrie usually beats Arrow just all by herself. They play Arrow alone, your Valkyrie like shuts that down, right? Like it's gonna pull it into lane with some stuff, and now all their stuff is 3, and you just like smash face. If you can fill some things, there's not much they can do about it. Iron Man and Rescue alone are 18 power. So if you can get like an extra couple things in there, say you do that on Angela lane, or say you like rogued something or had a Mojo in there or whatever, like you had an extra card in there, that's your Ghost lane. Now you're beating like their biggest stuff fairly competently. Because you have a turn 7, you can pull off lots of these combos with a lot of regularity. Any comments about the deck as a core, or should I talk about alts?
So what do you think are the good matchups for this deck?
So it rolls Deathwave. It rolls the big the big whatchamacallit decks, the big Red Skull Shuri decks that are everywhere. It doesn't always beat the control decks, but it has a reasonable matchup because you're not like getting hit by anything. They just often have things that stop you. In those matchups, Luke Cage is especially important to give your stuff that little extra boost. Outside of that, it doesn't like have terrible matchups. It's weak against Dino. It's weak against Darkhawk. If you see those, you really, really need to see Rogue. I hate Rogue, like hate Rogue, but she's the only way you win those matchups. Otherwise, like, there's not a lot you can do about that. The lane control decks, it often loses to because you struggle to like stop those lane control decks that people like TLSG are pushing at the moment. You don't have super great answers for things that close off lanes. But like your big meta things, it's more or less an answer to. So the cards I'd like to fit, the single card I'd most like to fit is Hood. Hood doesn't require a package. Hood is just amazing. The negative two means if you don't see Ghost, you're still very often getting priority on that last turn for your Valkyrie / Shang-Chi, and that's incredible. A lot of the versions of this run Yellow Jacket and a Wasp as zero cost. You can just throw in a lane with Valkyrie on the last turn in order to get everything settled. Many versions, the version that's most popular of this, Shay's version, runs Daredevil, Spidey, and Professor X as like a lane filler thing. And lastly, my original versions of this ran Sarah as a way to like lead into the Valkyrie turn. I found that while the negative one is obviously very nice, magic giving you an extra turn to just draw the damn Valkyrie and like get set up is usually better. Finally, the last card, the card that I would run when I have it, and I will be pinning this card. Hopefully by next week when you hear me, I will have this pinned and be well on my way to buying it. The Thanos Zoo version of this, I think, is the very best version. And like all of these are amazing. No one expects Valkyrie. You should be able to steal like half a tournament just by like, oh crap, I don't have an answer for that. Things happening. That's Valkyrie.
All right, so I guess that comes to me. So I'm going to take a drink out of my Devil Cup here and talk about my favorite deck, which is Hazmat. So I am playing, been playing a lot, the Pigpen. I believe that is, just to make sure I say that. Yes, Pigpen, who is at HS Pigpen on Twitter. I believe he's the originator of this deck. It is running Ant-Man, Quinjet, Luke Cage, Hazmat, Zabu, Armor, Mystique, Wong, Moon Girl, Typhoid Mary, Sarah, and Spectrum. The big difference of this deck between and a lot of the stack, the sort of stock Hazmat decks, and why I prefer this version over the stock ones, is it is not running Odin. It's running it because Odin doubles down on this deck's biggest weakness, which is it can't, the traditional game plan can't really beat like Panther or beat some of the like big Shuri plays, doing Hazmat stuff, unless you draw the stone cold nuts of like Wong, Mystique, copying your Hazmats and like putting two of them in a lane with a Mystique Wong and then a third one. Like, unless you are in Magical Christmas Land, this deck really can't beat the big game plays unless you do a Spectrum play. And it also can make it really difficult for your opponent to contest what you're doing. If you play two ongoings in one lane, two ongoings in another lane, two ongoings in a third lane, they are like, are you going, and they see Luke Cage, so they're like, oh, this is Hazmat, so I need to play a big thing in one place, and that'll let me do this. But instead, you just go, okay, I will play Wong, I will Spectrum, or I will just Spectrum, and that, and you've spread out your ongoings enough that you can just contest multiple lanes, is really surprising. Because a lot of people pigeonhole this deck, and Spectrum gives you a lot of outs that you wouldn't have in the sort of stock version that I've really, really appreciated. And the fact that if you get lucky and you get Sarah and you can, like Hazmat and, Spectrum on the same turn, that's just like a blowout for a lot of decks. Even Panther decks can really struggle. And when I say Panther, I mean just sort of any of the sort of big boy or girl decks can really struggle against. Because that is definitely the matchup that is can be the hardest, particularly if they're able to like really get two lanes heavily contested. But this beats a lot of other decks, because a lot of other decks are trying to nickel and dime. They're trying to do little mopey control things, play some things like that. And like this deck does not care about things like Shang-Chi a lot, right? It does not care about like a lot of the tech cards that aren't focused on ongoings. And if you can dodge an Enchantress by being careful with your Wong, you really can just steal games from people who are really confident that they got you, because their game plan is way more traditional. So I've really, really been enjoying this deck, and I really do think that Spectrum is a game changer for how to approach playing this deck.
So I partially know this, but I just want it like clarified. Is there an argument for Magic over Syrah?
I think that there is an argument for Magic over Syrah, and I know there's some versions that have been playing it. I prefer Syrah because it opens up the surprise plays, like where you are able to do the Spectrum hazmat with your opponent not able to do anything about it, right? In a way that you can't do, right? The math is correct there, right? On seven, you still can't do that. Right.
Yeah, you would have to do it five, then play one on six, one on seven.
Yeah, one on six and one on seven, which can work, and I think does have some things for it. But I think that I think in a more traditional hazmat running Odin, I think Magic makes more sense than Syrah. But I think since this has two game plans for you to draw, so if you don't draw Luke, you can do the Spectrum game plan. If you draw Luke and hazmat, you can do the game plan. Or if you draw Luke in Spectrum, Luke is still going on with Spectrum because he's a ongoing. He becomes a three. Like, I think that there's a lot of different options that you don't want that turn to give your opponent additional chances to draw things. You just want the acceleration of Syrah. That would be my argument for why you prefer that over regular Magic.
I dig that. Are there any other cards you considered, like perhaps Absorbing Man, which seems like it might be good here?
Absorbing Man, but I would consider Absorbing Man. My guess would be that he is awkward. I think the one card that is definitely cuttable and I would like play around with, maybe run your own Shang-Chi, is Moon Girl. Moon Girl raises the ceiling of this deck a lot. Like, you could do some truly insane things with her, but also sometimes she's awkward, right, and clunky. And she's what you draw on, like, add turn five or turn six, and she just doesn't do anything. So I think if you're trying to explore space, I think it would definitely be getting away from Moon Girl. That does lower your ability to get out of your bad matchups by doing insane combo things. Mm-hmm. But I think the deck would probably be slightly more consistent, particularly if there's something is out there suppressing the Shuri corner of the meta game a little bit more, then I think Moon Girl is a card that could go for something like Absorbing Man, could go for something like Shang-Chi, could go for something like Enchantress, or maybe or Rogue. Rogue is probably a better one here.
If Moon Girl went, Quinjet would go too, because that's the only use.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, you could just throw, I don't know, Sunspot or something in there. But
Yondu, if Chris was here.
Yeah, Yondu, if Chris was here. But sort of, I think that that's where the pivot point is with the deck. Moon Girl gives you a big ceiling, but does somewhat ruin the floor of the deck, because there's definitely been games where I've drawn Moon Girl, she's literally, you wanted Syrah, you wanted Spectrum, you wanted Hazmat, you wanted Luke, and you drew her on turn five or turn six, and you're like, oh great, this doesn't do anything.
Very cool. What are the good matchups and bad matchups for this, besides like it struggles with like the biggest of the Red Skull stuff and it beats the shit out of control?
I think it's really the big issues are are the Shuri decks, particularly somebody who is like on to you about what you're trying to do and they're playing Shuri. I think most other matchups you can play out of. I think this deck rolls over Zoo, and it, like Glazer was saying earlier, like people try to do those like board fill decks. Those board fill decks are LOL against this deck frequently, because as long as you realize what they are doing, like I played against a game like this where I got 8 cubes out of a debris player, where they were like, debris, I'm like, oh, you are just in trouble here, because you've also filled your deck and your side with a bunch of garbage, and my Luke Cage is going to protect me. I also think one of the things I like about this deck, and I like about Luke Cage in general, and this is like this true in your deck as well, is Luke protects you from a lot of bullshit in Marvel Snap. Like just like random things like the Krosha, right? That just can like really screw up your turn. Luke Cage says no to that, right? If you get Scorpioned, Luke Cage stops that, right? Like these are just like things that a lot of sort of mid-range decks really can struggle with a solid draw about this. I think that this deck has a lot of play against most decks in the meta, as long as you are willing to remember that you have 2 combos in your deck, not 1. Right? Do not get tunnel visioned on the Hazmat game plan. Remember the Spectrum game plan. And if you do that, I think you have a lot of outs against even things that the Odin version of this deck would really struggle with, including even dog. Like they dog your Wong lane. You're like, okay, well, I have a bunch of other ongoings in other places. I can still go over them by playing Spectrum in a different lane and not getting the double, but still getting a lot of stats on that last turn.
Have you considered running 2 sixes? Is that crazy? A lot of decks, like in Kate, for consistency's sake, just try and run 2.
I mean, that's a possibility. That could be something that Moon Girl has turned into as well. Like maybe something like Magneto or even America Chavez to make it so you draw your combo pieces a little bit earlier.
Only if you play the Pixel one like Bootman just did.
All right. Will?
Well, I will admit up front a slight misunderstanding of the show notes here with battle mode, and Aaron now specifies it as particularly battle mode tournaments. I think I probably would have picked something a little more top end here, but I'm going to stick with what I've got. Because I do still think there's something to be said for this, particularly with my niche here on the show as the contrary anti-meta, I just want to have fun. So in that case, I'm rolling with Bounce. Pretty old, or based on a pretty old list that I apologize I did not jot down where I had pulled this from. It was a YouTube video from Beta that had sent me this direction. But it's pretty straightforward in that we're not really looking at late game shenanigans from pool 4, pool 5 type of cards. Instead, it's essentially a bunch of one drops and bounce from Beast and or Falcon, the bounces to hand, and various other effects like Hood, Mantis, Agent 13, power up the collector, and of course replaying your cards are going to power up Angela and Bishop. So I think for my personal preference here in a battle mode type of scenario, I like that this type of deck does not always commit and telegraph hard to any particular lanes. I mean, sure, I'm wanting to get stuff out on the field and probably load up an Angela or something. But it's very easy to pick up my board and reshuffle depending on my opponent's plays. So I really like the flexibility that I think is valuable in a battle mode scenario when you are playing the same match several times. So that some decks with a more, I don't want to say predictable play pattern, but a more formulaic, shall we say, they have an order they want to do things in, can become a little rote playing that same match over and over in battle mode. So I like the option to spread that around and be maneuverable against how my opponent is attempting to stack their board. So
Will,
go ahead. I guess I should have read the deck. You did read the whole deck previously on yours, didn't you?
Yep.
So this is Hood, Agent 13, Iceman, Korg, Mantis, Rocket Raccoon, Angela, Collector, Beast, Falcon, Bishop, and good old America Chavez.
So what in do you think are the good matchups for this deck? Like, where do you think it's sort of able to prey on other decks that people might bring?
I think it's got a pretty good spot against, say, Move, which admittedly nobody really loves that much, as best I can tell.
It's getting more popular.
But I do think being able to pick up my plays on 5 and rearrange based on the likely Heimdall is pretty, pretty solid there. You know, as far as some of the other top stuff, yeah, I did not come in here as prepped as I should have been. Note to self to be more, full-fledged in my notes here.
So I've played against a good amount of this deck, and I think it is extremely frustrating for control decks and often just beats the hell out of them. There's not a whole lot that they can do to stop it. The other thing that I will never ever understand is why it just doesn't run Khazar. It's running 1,000 one drops. Like, I understand that it wants to do other things, but like Khazar and Khazar and
Marvel,
and like some more Bishop combos, like particularly Mysterio, I think would be amazing here. And you don't really want to go too much on extra two drops, right? But like, and you're never going to really want to pick your Mysterio up. But like, I think that Mysterio play is really good. So those are the two cards I really like. I've played against this exact deck a lot, and like Collector is freaking terrifying in it. But like, and if control becomes the meta, I think, and like control is my meta, right? Like that's mostly what I'm going to be playing going forward. Now that I've got Ghost. So I think that both of these decks are really good at stomping out that meta where like something like, but where it doesn't have like neither one, I don't think beats like Death Wave running Arrow usually. Right. But like, but like control beats that, and it sets up a nice little rock, paper, scissors within the meta.
Yeah, as far as it's worth it with Mysterio, I do worry a little bit about my slots on the board, and occasionally a debris or something might cause some difficulty filling in slots there. Or on the reverse side of things, sometimes having some hand size problems. So something like that can be difficult when I'm returning stuff to hand. Likewise, some of the locations can be more problematic than I would like when they muck with my hand and tamper with my ability to return stuff so that I can play it elsewhere. So the Mysterio thing kind of worries me on that front as far as eating up slots on the board, but I could definitely see Khazar. That was a definite other option I kind of fiddled with. For folks that are particularly worried about Killmonger, I suppose you could find some room here for armor, or just embrace possible kill and slot in your own death. But I think a lot of times this deck, by returning stuff to hand, is passing on initiative there. So if you are relatively certain when that play is coming, I think you can play around Killmonger pretty well.
I dig that. I absolutely dig that. So did either of you watch any of the big tournaments this weekend?
I was,
or last weekend, I guess. So I watched a little bit of them, and it seems like what's really, really been good are these surprise decks, decks that no one expects. Your meta decks, outside of Shuri decks, which just get so big, they don't care that you're ready, right? Like, unless the opponent has Shang-Chi, it doesn't super duper matter. What's winning is often these surprise decks. And I think that's going to shake up the meta in a real way. Does anyone have any predictions about how that's going to work?
So I think what needs to happen is, like, right now, there's a split between memes becoming dreams and just people taking their ladder decks, right? And particularly because tournaments right now are primarily streamer-focused. And so, like, who is your... Who brought Rowan to the tournament, Glazer, that you were watching? Was it J-Hugs?
Oh, that was J-Hugs.
Yes, J-Hugs, right? Like, J-Hugs has a streamer identity, and other people like that, and the sort of decks that they're famous for, that is like part of what they need to do is promote their brand, right? And I think once the sort of tournaments that get streamed are a bit more like open field tournaments, I think that's when we're really going to see whether or not these surprise decks have the legs to survive the pressure of a lot of people playing meta decks, or that these meta decks really at the end of the day have the legs to just brush aside the surprise decks. And that's sort of where I'm more interested to see where the meta develops. Once we start seeing like large, not even like 1,000 people tournaments, but like a couple hundred people full Swiss tournaments, and how the meta game shakes out. Because I think that the basic archetypes from ladder will translate into successful like tier one and tier two tournament decks, but they are going to require some tweaks, but I think that at the end of the day, once we get the larger tournaments, some of these surprise decks will not have the staying power that they had in these sort of showcase events that have kicked off Marvel Snap's tournaments.
I don't think the best ladder decks are going to be the best tournament decks. I think the best ladder decks are very often going to be 1 and 2 cube decks in these tournaments, because everyone knows exactly what they can do and when. I think the reason is, I think the surprise factor is going to be significantly more important, and I'm not sure if there's a real answer for that. If I'm playing the big Shuri deck, right? Like, if I'm playing the big Shuri against the big Shuri deck, I immediately can tell that, like, I should run or I should stay, and I don't really like, or if I'm favored or not. So like, you have to beat me 7 or 8 times before you're going to get anywhere for that. Whereas I just need to steal one big cube win when I know it, and like, I've got you on the back foot. And I think that's going to remain really, really big in tournaments, thanks to the snap mechanic.
I mean, interesting. Go ahead, Will.
Well, I was just kind of contemplating the retreats, and it feels to me like some of the more retreat-focused ladder decks, I don't know, say take a negative deck that is probably retreating a lot when the combo doesn't come together. I feel like there's kind of a soft cap on that type of play in battle mode, right? It's probably right to call that a hard cap. You really can only do that so many times with your 10, I don't know, HP or whatever it's called. So I feel like that type of ladder deck is unlikely to be a tournament staple, right?
I would guess so. But maybe that's so explosive that like the wins you get are so different. It's really tough to say. What do you think, Roy?
I think what's really fascinating is we haven't really seen like a card game with a betting mechanic like this. That's not poker. I'm talking about like of these kinds of card games. And so that Glazer's point is good about the snap mechanic being different. I think for me to double back to my point about the ladder decks, I think at their core, the ladder decks can be transformed into tournament decks with some changes, you know, to the fact that you're going to have to retreating comes at a higher cost in tournaments than it comes on ladder, right? Because you have those 10 cubes and those are the only 10 cubes you can work from. And also the fact that the more rounds it goes, if I remember correctly how battle mode works, like you start auto snapping.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's like, so that's accelerating the game to an endpoint in a way that you don't have to worry about. So I think that, like, particularly like, for example, Death Wave, I think Death Wave is a tournament ready deck that may require some tweaks on the margins, but I think the core package of cards is strong enough to be highly competitive on a tournament. Another point is that rogue decks can be very powerful in tournaments. Like, Glazer and I were on a high stakes testing team for a card game. And one of the things I learned doing that and then observing this in other card games that I follow is rogue decks are really amazing. And particularly in a meta that is full of medium strength decks, rogue decks can be really powerful. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. when you get into a meta where the best deck is extremely powerful, rogue decks get to be much weaker. I think right now, Marvel Snap is in a place where the decks feel medium, and this is doubly so, I think, in tournaments where people aren't necessarily sure of like what the best strategies are. But once that starts settling and once people begin to sort out like what a Marvel Snap tournament experience really is and where its pressure points are, I think that there's the card pool is powerful enough that it will find a set of 2 to 3 decks that are so much more powerful than everything else people can doing that rogue decks will get squeezed out, because frequently these rogue decks can only beat 1 to 2 of those powerful decks, and it relies on running hot or that and hit those 2 decks that it's good against and not hit the 3rd one that it is terrible against. And so that's sort of my overall overarching philosophy sort of about this.
So while I would agree with that concept, I think the big difference from Marvel Snap beyond the snap mechanic that I think changes this is location variance. Mm-hmm. Location variance is so heavy that I think it's really going to affect things and make that surprise factor even more, right? Like, because you're going to just win or lose some games because, I don't know, you had to blind play your sunspot, and then it was the thing that put it to your side, to the other side of the board, right? And that, like, screwed up your tempo to the point where, like, you ended up losing a game you should have otherwise won. And, like, these little things that locations do, I think, give rogue decks extra power. Will?
I think another factor going forward that we're not certain of yet is exactly how, second breakfast, right?
Dinner.
Dang it.
They're not hobbits.
I was thinking dinner, and then I was like, no, that's the wrong meal. It's breakfast. Anyway, we don't really know yet what second dinner feels is kind of the optimal pool of highly competitive tourney decks. If say it gets to that type of scenario Roy is talking about where there's 3 that are head and shoulders above everything else and squeezing out kind of the rogue decks and the like, is that the realm that second dinner is okay with? Or in a digital format like this, are they pushing, you know, ban hammers and tweaks of various kinds earlier? I think we need a little bit of time to see what they feel that optimal size is.
So Roy knows Ben Brode games better than I do, right? But like, it seems like this craving for novelty that he has and novel experiences means that he's going to want it to be more wide open than that. I don't know, like, if I can guarantee that entirely, but that is the immediate feeling I get.
I think that's fair. I just think no one should go into a tournament game assuming that the meta will be wide open for long. Like, that's just my experience watching, following card games, playing in card games, is that, like, sometimes the meta in tournaments feeling wide open is largely an illusion. And the more and more pressure that is put on the tournament scene to produce rewards, the more that illusion of the meta being open goes away.
Are you torn? And
yet, hilariously, people kind of want the illusion to be maintained.
They do.
Even in that high stakes scenarios, right? It's to the benefit of those that can see behind the illusion to maintain the illusion for everyone else. And yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, like, if you follow Magic, but we'll use Magic example. Like, I think the game we played together, Thrones, is actually an even better example of this, but the average listener's not going to know these references I'm going to make. So, like, if you look at formats that are not played by professional Magic players, they tend to have the illusion that the format is very open, right? If you follow that scene, so, like, for example, right now, Modern is not being, which is a format I play, is not being played at a very highly competitive level, on the highest Magic stages. So right now, a lot of people feel that Modern feels relatively open. Yes, it's based around some of these powerful cards from a set that came out a few years ago, but it's still pretty open. The same was true of Pioneer, a different Magic format, but currently Pioneer is being played at the highest level, and the metagame has constricted to a smaller set of decks that are highly powerful, that these pros have sort of drilled in on these, like, 4 to 5 decks being sort of the top of the metagame. And that is, I think, what tends to happen in all card games as the pressure gets go. As we move into whether it's sponsored by Second Dinner or Snap Fan or Marvel Snap Zone, as we get to larger tournaments with higher stakes and much less a world championship circuit, like a circuit that's going to lead to a world championship, there's going to be pressure to put this. I mean, the last game that all of us played together, although I actually don't think Will did, this was also true in, Storybook Brawl with its builds, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is just a case. The more the stakes go, the more the metagame constricts as more and more serious players begin to realize what the meta, like, limits are.
I could dig that. Okay, so given everything we've just said, pick one card that we haven't discussed in any of our decks today. Take a minute and think. I'll go first so that you don't have to, like, to give you guys time to think. One card that you think will help define the tournament metagame going forward. So, my card is Thanos. I actually have, like, 4, so if you need me to go for more than one, that's fine. My first card is Thanos. I think Thanos decks, because they're so hard to predict and are so wildly confusing to play against often, will end up winning a lot of tournaments, at least early in the developing metagame, because people will not be sure how and what to play against until it is often too late, and that's going to win them a lot of games. Any thoughts on Thanos before we jump on?
Other than the fact you stole the card that came to mind for me, Aaron. So,
sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, man.
Want me to go again while you guys think?
Yeah, right. Go. Well, no, actually,
I've,
you know what?
I've got two possible options here. Go. Yeah. I mean, do I take the easy, sensible one or the oddity?
Which, why not both? Prefer? Meme.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, the easy, sensible one that I don't think was really mentioned here among these is Galactus, right? If as a pool 5 card, it stays, and one that they've said is going to stay there, much like Thanos, it kind of paradoxically means in a wider pool, it's going to be one of the rarest cards, which maybe makes, like, constant prediction of that over the course of a tournament a little less likely. But on the other hand, the higher tier dedicated players are probably more likely to have it and, you know, see about using it. So I think that's probably got an option. The oddball choice is Agatha, just because I'm curious to see if anybody out there tries to kind of automate the tournament experience and see if that can be done. I'm sure not in an entirely reliable way, but in a respectable enough way for whatever their goals are. So I'm curious.
Oh, man. I want to play in a meta game where Agatha is meta in the tournament. Oh, man. What a way to cut down on brain fog at the end of the tournament.
Yeah.
I guess for me, my answer would be a card I don't think we mentioned, but is actually a pretty straightforward Marvel Snap card, which is Lockjaw, right? I don't think any of the decks that we've talked about here. I think the Lockjaw archetype is one that I think will end up being like a pretty good tournament deck, particularly for like stealing cubes and forcing retreats. Right, like where in a tournament, like your opponent, you have to really ask yourself, like, all right, it's turn five. My opponent still has an opportunity to pull an Infinaut in their lane. Like, is it worth me risking four life for this? Right.
There is Thanos Lockjaw Valkyrie.
There is Thanos Lockjaw Valkyrie. There we go. Like things like that. I think that Lockjaw is an archetype that I think will have real legs. Because it has real legs on the ladder, and people I think are getting better and better at building Lockjaw decks, and I think that the tournaments will be a further crucible to refine that archetype and the best approaches to it.
So my next one, and we can call it after this unless you guys have some more, I think Doc Ock is incredible in tournaments.
Man, what a card.
So
interesting.
It messes up a lot of what your opponent is doing. If you can shuri Doc Ock, so your risk right now is that you Doc Ock into Shang-Chi, right? And then you're just a sad panda. But if you can mitigate that, and I'm not sure how, but if you can figure out how to mitigate that through various means, shuri into Doc Ock into last card brain into Zola. Or into Taskmaster, assuming you've played a reasonable curve before, then Taskmaster should work just fine, is going to be an incredibly strong play. And likewise, and also it gives you an awful lot of information about what the hell your opponent is playing. The other card that does that, by the way, is Daredevil. But like Daredevil is so freaking obvious, he's not fun to talk about for this.
Also, like Daredevil yeah. isn't like a archetype of card, you know what I mean? Like...
I mean,
and
like,
you did mention him earlier.
So, I mean, there's like Daredevil control, right? Like, Daredevil, like, there's a whole, like, pseudo archetype. A lot of the Valkyrie decks that are built around Daredevil into Professor X or Daredevil into Spider-Man as, like, the way to make sure that you've won a lane. And, like, winning a lane is a lot of the battle for certain decks.
That's fair. Oh, you know what? A card that we haven't mentioned? Doctor Doom. These kind of like cheese a lane decks become very staple in tournaments to sort of bully people into retreating. Dr. Doom is a great way to defeat a Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Right.
Or a storm.
And I think that Doom is definitely something to keep an eye on as a way of like, again, if it comes down to bullying people. But I think that does bring us to where we wanted to sort of end this episode. Hopefully these are three good suggestions for folks, or at least three fun suggestions. Well, one good suggestion and two fun suggestions of decks to play.
I might be sold on yours. I think yours isn't necessarily a bad suggestion. No offense, Will. Yours is definitely fun. But like,
oh, yeah, no.
Like, I think it's super cool.
I knew what I was going for.
But like, I think that we're going to see some tournament metas that are like largely big stuff versus control, right? And like I can see control chasing away big stuff for a while. And should that happen?
Definitely. So our variant of the week is Valkyrie. And I just want to say that Valkyrie has some lit variants.
Like, yep.
So, Will, which one would you want?
I'm not even sure why you guys are bothering to ask me. I am such an Art Germ stan. You know I'm going with Art Germ.
Okay.
I will say, slight nod, though, this is a pixel variant that I actually kind of don't hate. It does actually remind me of a good old PS1 era game, Valkyrie Profile, if you guys remember that one.
Oh, I'm sure. Of course I remember that one. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Really? An old JRPG? Do I remember it? Yes. That's the podcast we should be having right now.
Exactly.
Aaron?
So I like Rian Gonzalez. I really, really like the Rian Gonzalez. I love the art on it. It's gorgeous. There is no bad one. No, like, there is none I would not play, including, like, the original. I like Ryan Kinnear's art a lot. The bass is really good. Like, running through the freaking Rainbow Bridge. Like, cool as Rian Gonzalez is the one I really want. But, like, dude, the baby one is really cool. Like, Hugging Frog Thor? Come on.
That's These the one I would pick, is the Scotty Young one. I mean, the Rian Gonzalez one is, like, I mean, it's hard to turn down that one. But I think, like, the sort of Scotty Young one, this is one of the best Scotty Young arts. And, it's just very charming. So I think it's, like, impossible to miss here with Valkyrie right now and what we've got available. Like, again, I second Will's thing. Like, if this was a pixel variant I opened, I would be happy. I would upgrade this and enjoy it and play it. And not ironically, like I do some of my pixel variants, but definitely earnestly. But that brings us to the end of this episode where we offer a recommendation to each people, so to our listeners. So we'll start with our small creator of the week.
You keep throwing me off. You think you're trying to close before I can prop my boy J-Hugs. J-Hugs, the Ronin Stan, owner of a quiet but nice Discord, a content creator that is 100% worth following. He is calm and relaxing and presents good, interesting decks that are not the meta norm. And often, because of that, steal cubes. He's a very cool and sensible dude. And I urge you to check out J-Hugs, that is the letter J with abrazos, hugs, right after it. Yeah, Roy gave a hug gesture, but we can't all see him. So check out J-Hugs if you want some good stuff. That is our small content creator of the week.
Will, what would you recommend outside of Marvel Snap to one of our listeners?
You know, lately I have been greatly amused by new Netflix mockumentary Kunk on Earth. So if you enjoy actual BBC documentaries or British humor, or I don't know why you would want to watch this if you didn't enjoy one of those, but it is a great combination of the two. So short half hour episodes and just kind of dry, bizarre-ish humor, a little bit like the BBC meets The Daily Show meets Borat. So,
it's not worth the third thing I expected you to say at all.
That's definitely.
It's not as extreme as that. But as far as the whole setup of this person talking to, let's say, normal straight men and women. So, yeah.
All right. It's quite an experience. Just like going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is quite the experience. I mean, honestly, if you had asked me when Marvel started, close to 20 years ago now, that we would actually get Kang the Conqueror in a Marvel movie, I wouldn't have believed you. So you should, this goes without saying for a Marvel Snap podcast, but folks, go see the new MCU movie. It's awesome. You should definitely do it. It's weird to say this to a giant corporation, but you should go and support the MCU with all that's going on with the instability of the movie market right now. Glazer, what is your recommendation before I tell people?
Hang on. I just want to say one quick thing about Quantumania. So I would have believed Kang, because Kang is like one of the three or four biggest Avengers villains. If you said we were doing Microverse, really? We're doing full on Microverse?
In
with like the mad whatever his name is, the dude with the buttons that controls emotions.
I mean, to be fair, would you have thought that the Microverse would have been central to an Avengers film? Because it was.
MODOK would be in the Microverse?
So sure, but that was all like background stuff, right? Like a whole movie. We're doing full on, there's a universe under ours. That's just like, what? That's like crazy. Okay. You go, acid-y 70s Marvel, you go. That said, my recommendation is not something that's out until this summer, but I know it's awesome. Perhaps you have heard of Monolith Soft or the Xeno games. Yeah? They have a small game that they released before their Xeno titles for the GameCube. Actually, a series of games. They are both Baten Kaitos games. Baten Kaitos are like these, I don't know, just excellent sort of card-based RPGs with the full Monolith Soft feel to them. They are fantastic. They are being remastered for the Switch this summer. If you like JRPGs and like, if you like Marvel Snap, you'd probably like JRPGs. I feel like there's a fairly healthy overlap. I really do. I think card gamers and JRPG gamers maybe tend to like similar things. In my personal opinion and experience, look, like half the Thrones people I'm ever like, do you like JRPGs? They're like, absolutely. Like everyone who played Magic that I talked to, I was like, do you like JRPGs? They're like, yeah, man. Like it's just for whatever reason, there seems to be a healthy overlap. Also, Baten Kaitos is fundamentally run on a card game in a fairly, not a similar manner, but like in a fairly similar manner to the way, what was the name of your
Midnight Suns
is run on a card system. So it is similar in that way. It's card game. It's an amazing experience, and people should be looking forward to it, and thus looking forward to supporting it. Baten Kaitos remastered.
Right. Well, those are all awesome recommendations, and what I need to do though is recommend that you find us on various social medias. All right. Again, you can get replied to by Aaron at our Twitter account at SnapJudgePod. You can, in between getting those wonderful, wonderfully useless reels shared with you about, I don't know, whatever the Facebook algorithm is currently thinking you will like, you can find us on Snap Judgments Podcast there on Facebook. And above, and most importantly, you can support us and support Snap Fan by joining the Snap Fan Discord, engaging with us in our channels there, but just overall supporting their awesome broader community there. And finally, last but not least, you should definitely email us, -Glazer, at our email, which is snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Just like last week, the show notes are telling me to kick this to Glazer as we move into the finale. Whoa. Here. So let's wonder what this is.
If he wants Chicabio. You still skipped something.
Oh, what did we skip?
Oh, we skipped
our Mastodon account that I'm still running, snapjudgments@tabletop.vip.
We'll go and put it into the show notes so it gets copied into future episodes, because I will add that every time.
Okay.
But if it's not there, I am not going to remember that, Will. All right. I keep forgetting that Mastodon is a thing. All right. Glazer, what is this going to be?
Coming soon, TM, remember how long it took us to get socials, we will find our way onto YouTube to make your life easier. Soon, TM, might be this summer, as Roy cries about it. But what I really want to say is, Jacavio, buddy, come home. We miss you.
All right. Well, Aaron, thank you for joining us this evening.
It's been a good one.
Will, thank you so much for coming back for another episode.
Always fun.
All right, Snap fans, have a great rest of your week. Stay safe and keep on snapping.